You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, a very special bonus episode covering Primate and some other murderous monkey movies. Featuring face ripping, throat ripping, baboons, orangutans, chimps, and all other damn dirty apes. Cripples, sign language, mad scientists, evil injections, sexual swellings, and cuckmaster Stanley Tucci. Martin.
Yes.
You're a clinical cunt. Welcome back to another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin, the first Secret Handshake episode of 2026, and it's about killer monkeys. You know what? That just kind of feels right.
It does.
But why? You kind of pitched this idea to me, and we got the ball rolling on it, because it seemed like, honestly, a quick and dirty one-off that ties into the rest of the podcast, because the main movie of this episode is Primate, the new Johannes Roberts joint about a killer monkey that attacks a bunch of girls in a mansion in Hawaii. And spoiler alert, we're going to get to it in its own segment, but it's fucking awesome.
It's very good.
It's super violent. It's 89 minutes in and out, and holy shit, it's awesomely gory.
Yeah. Phenomenal. No, I pitch it to you sitting in this exact same spot where I'm always looking out for another monster movie episode. I really liked we did that crazy marathon watch of all the shark movies a couple summers ago,
which included 47 Meters Down, Uncaged,
which is, as we talked about then, one of one of my favorite shark movies besides Jaws.
That's why it got its own spine number.
It did. And that was the movie of the episode. And so when I heard he was doing...
Because you had been trying to get me to watch that movie for a little while before we actually did that episode. And when we did, I was finally like, I get it. I get why Martin likes it so much. It's not just a really good shark movie, but it's just, this guy's a really good director. It's really well constructed. And again, it's down and dirty, like sub 90 minutes in and out, and just really violent and nasty.
Yeah, he has a formula that he sticks to with a lot of his films, and he also did, I don't want to talk too much of him right now, but he also did Strangers Pray by Night, which is a great sequel.
Yes.
And also the original 47 Meters, and he's had a misfire with Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, but he's back in full force. But
you know what? I've never watched that movie, so for me, he has a perfect record.
Yeah, you don't have
a thousand.
You don't have to ever see it, so you're good. But no, we were just, I was like, oh man, Primate's coming out, and I had heard about it, and I said, oh, that's a perfect jumping off point for, you know, killer monkey movies. And it was crazy. We were sitting right here, and there aren't a lot. Like, there are gorilla movies. There's obviously the King Kong movies and the spinoffs and the ripoffs. But, like, straight up smaller, like, chimps and orangutans, it's not that many to choose from.
Well, let's be real. I get it. Because monkeys aren't scary.
That's what a lot of people said in a lot of the reviews I was reading for a lot of these films.
And that's the thing, is I think that's one of the main hurdles as we kind of go over these films, is that, like, you know, particularly one that we chose, the monkey's so cute that it takes me out of the movie while I'm watching it, because I'm like, this little motherfucker, like, I want to pet him the whole time, and he's like cutting people's throats and whatever. But yeah, I think that is the main reason why there aren't that many in the killer monkey subgenre,
right?
I guess because like it's hard to take them seriously as like scary animals attack antagonists. It's not like, you know, the lions in a movie that's as silly as like Roar, to where they're still working with like real lions,
and you're
like,
terrifying.
A lion will eat you.
Yeah.
Like, where a monkey, you're like, oh, that's cool. It kind of, like, people would always, you know, there's a pet monkey on Friends, you know? Like, they're nice creatures. They don't come and kill you. But I guess that's also, like, the in for a lot of these filmmakers is exploring the animal that I guess best resembles human beings.
Yep.
You know, finding the link, no pun intended, based on one of the movie's titles, between humans and monkeys, apes, orangutans, whatever. That's the other thing, too. I'll ask you this question. Is that, like, do you think Planet of the Apes and that being a huge franchise and being a very big, like, silly, mythical, outer space franchise that involves all kinds of stuff that we've gone over from time travel to, you know, nuclear holocaust, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think monkeys and Planet of the Apes damaged these animals being antagonists in horror movies going forward because nobody could take them seriously?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a mix of that and King Kong. I think that there we have a history of even the original King Kong is this like is there's a goofiness, but there's also a sympathetic nature to them that they have a naturally, you know, a sympathetic quality of, oh, he's almost human, right? It's that
there's a reason Fay Wray falls in love with him.
Right, right. And but I think that, you know, with Planet of the Apes also were just so, so popular and so clearly not real that what really sets these movies apart and these the few horror films is that pretty much all of them except Primate have real apes and chimps in them, like trained. And that's actually the most impressive thing about all these films is
trained. We might be using for a few of these titles that word kind of liberally, because there's one in particular where that's kind of the appeal of the movie is you're like, damn, I think that baboon might kill that motherfucker.
Right. And there's another in the list that we'll talk about, which is they're very well trained.
Yes. No, exactly.
Actually, two of them in particular.
I mean, one uses it as a highlight of the actual narrative.
Right.
With a title card before it even begins. So the movies that we're going to talk about before we get to Primate is we have Link. And we have George Romero's Monkey Shines, Chacma, and In the Shadow of Kilimanjaro.
In the Shadow of Kilimanjaro.
Which is the weirdest one. Well, yeah.
And the hardest to see.
Actually, George, the Monkey Shines movie is probably the weirdest of the four. But which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Link. I think it's an interesting jumping off point. We got a 1986.
One of our favorite directors, Richard Franklin.
Richard Franklin, director of Road Games, Psycho 2, an amazing film.
Patrick. Real Ozploitation staple. Also written by Everett DeRoche.
Yeah, when we did our Ozploitation episode, I mean, Everett DeRoche pretty much wrote all of them.
There was only one screenwriter in Australia in the 70s and 80s.
It's crazy. Yeah, and he wrote awesome stuff like Frog Dreaming with Brian Trenchard Smith and
Long Weekend.
Long Weekend. He also
wrote Road Games.
And he worked. And I think he worked on Psycho 2.
I think so too.
I think he brought him over to help.
And Patrick.
Yep.
I mean, all the good ones, the bangers, they all came from one pen.
Well, and it's, you know, Link is a really, really weird movie. Because
that's putting it mildly,
because quite a few of these, this one in particular, takes a long time to become a horror film. You have a Jerry Goldsmith score that is totally him borrowing from himself from Gremlins.
Oh, it's totally. This
like carnival music, kind of like what they call them, like the squeak boxes or whatever, like
organ grinders.
Yeah, that the monkeys would play, and so it has this. It lulls you into this kind of goofy. Here's this. You have this. For those who haven't seen it, you have Terrence Stamp playing a researcher who works. It's in England, correct?
Yes, Scotland.
In Scotland, and he's very strange, and he has his
mullet.
Pet. He's got a crazy mullet, very like a balding Mel Gibson. Almost like that kind of way out hair,
that crazy shock of white hair that's distinctly Terrence Stamp though,
and he's being very Terrence Stamp, and he has a student played by a young Elizabeth Shue, and she wants to know more about his research. He's like, well, I need a new research assistant if you want to come basically for a few weeks on holiday. She's American, to my seaside mansion, basically.
This movie really takes off. So it's just kind of like when you first see the mansion, you're like, what the fuck? Like, it's crazy. It's huge. Also, like, how does this researcher afford this place?
I mean, I always imagined it was family. That he like a lot of old money in England or in Scotland. And but, you know, she quickly meets he has three trainees. And
orangutans.
One is orangutan. Link is an orangutan, and he is literally like the butler. Like, he is wearing like white and black, like tuxedo butler. He is so well trained in this movie. Like, he is like opening the door for her. He is like showing her where to go. Also, there's, I think, some stuff in the credits of how hard they work to train these animals.
Right.
And also to be like, hey, no animals were harmed. It may look like it in some of these scenes. And there are some scenes you could tell it was a little person or like a stunt person in a Link outfit. But a lot of it, he...
Because they don't count. They don't have souls.
No response. But she's brought into this world where she's learning about his research. And slowly, Link is getting more aggressive, but he's actually not even aggressive. He's just weird. Like, he's acting. It's this weird thing because a lot of these films dance on this line, like you were saying earlier, of, oh, they're almost like humans, but they're also an animal. You know, like, that's the kind of game they play in a lot of these.
It's interesting that you brought up the slow burn kind of pacing of the movie, is because that was really DeRoche and Franklin's thing.
Yes.
Because think about like Road Games. So much of that just is spent in the truck with Stacy Keach and Jamie Lee Curtis as he plays games with himself and is like narrating and everything and just kind of hanging out with his dingo. And like it takes a while after even that first attack scene till it gets to the murderer and like the rear window kind of element that he writes into this road movie. I mean, Patrick's pretty similar. Our main complaint with Patrick on the Ozploitation episode was that it's 2 hours long and it's about a guy in a coma with psychic powers.
Yeah.
It's like it takes forever to get there. But the other movie I kept thinking about with Link is Psycho 2, and how Psycho 2 purposefully approaches making a sequel to one of the most famous horror movies of all time. And it's like, I'm not going to just make this the slasher cash-in that you think it's going to be. It's going to be a psychological drama about what would happen if Norman Bates got out of prison and what would slowly build him towards possibly killing again. Like, they have a thing that they did.
Yep.
And Link, in a weird way, fits into it kind of perfectly because it becomes almost like Fatal Attraction with an orangutan, to where Link forms this fixation on Elizabeth Shue. And I mean, you know, I can't blame the man, whomst amongst us.
Yeah.
And like slowly becomes her stalker, to where, you know, the other thing about this movie is that like Richard Franklin was a huge Hitchcock disciple. You know, was part of the revival of, you know, when Hitchcock was really just considered kind of a trash merchant.
Yeah.
Before he was revered and became known as like the great auteur that he is. Like when Franklin was in California, he was bringing Hitchcock to campuses to screen his movies and do Q&As and stuff. And you can tell when he makes his movies, that's who he's borrowing from, like without any kind of apologetics. And it takes a while, and the movie's kind of stylish, and it has the big mansion, and it looks great and everything. But in the last third of it, when it becomes almost like a straight-up slasher with a monkey, he, like, pulls out all the stops. There's the overhead shots, the crane shots, the crazy, like, switching to rooms, like, De Palma style.
Yep.
Like, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, there's the one that comes to mind, I think it's even in the trailer, is she gets a shotgun and blasts through, and the camera moves back through the hole that's been now created in the door, or it goes the opposite way. It's really amazing stuff. But you also have, from a like storytelling perspective, the very Hitchcockian, and spoilers ahead, apologize to listeners, but Terrence Stamp, surprise, surprise, doesn't make it. But
he's the Janet Leigh of the movie.
Yeah, and there's a great thing where he has a locked room where he does most of his research upstairs. And basically, he's made her like a servant. Like, she's basically making his food. It's very like, there's an undercurrent of sexism, and he's like, this is all you're good for, yeah, you know? And she, he's a big metal door that he would lock, and...
Where she actually has pretty nuanced, interesting observations about these animals, and he treats them pretty cruelly. It almost has like a Frankenstein air of like Frankenstein being cruel to the monster.
Well, yeah, because there's also kind of a subplot of he's going to sell one or two of them,
yeah,
to a zoo or a collector, and he just is very mercenary.
I thought he sold them all for parts. I thought the guy came for when they were dead.
Well, there was one that was going to be dead, but one that was going to be alive.
Oh, okay.
That's the whole thing. She's like, oh, he's dead.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right, you're right.
And he's, you know, he's going to, he, when they basically get too smart or too hard to deal with or violent, he sends them off. But there's this whole sequence where, when I think it's, again, to your point about the Franklin connection to Hitchcock and the slow burn, is that you have about 30 minutes of the movie where you don't know where Terrence Stamp is. Like, his car is gone. You hear him through the door say, I'm okay, leave me alone. But you don't see him. And I'd seen it before, but I was like, oh, I think he's already dead. And it's this great, like, reveal of... that it makes you rethink the 30 minutes you just saw of her playing with Link, and it's all things kind of are normal still, when you're like, oh shit, he was dead the whole time. Like, Link's already a murderer, and the car is off the, you know, off the side of the cliff.
Well, that's the other thing too, is that Link is a pretty smart motherfucker, man. Like, he's
Machiavellian.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's doing this entire plot. He's hiding bodies, he's dumping cars over the he is like Monkey Norman Bates.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? Yeah, yeah.
And then he's, I also found it funny that the, you know, eventually in true slasher movie fashion, there's a jilted or scorned boyfriend who makes the trip, you know, once he loses connection with Elizabeth Shue, he wants to go check on her, brings his buddies, and one of his buddies, the one who discovers Terrence Stamp's body in the well and ends up in the well with him, frankly, is, I can't remember the Irish actor's name, right, but he's Dignam from The Departed.
Yeah, and from Braveheart. And,
Braveheart, yeah, all kinds of stuff. But he shows up, and every time that dude shows up in a movie, I literally go, that's not how you fucking spell citizens, man.
Where I always go, it's my island, you know.
My island. But it's like, it's a really solid, super weird little curio that is now out on Kino Lorber disc. I know the New Beverly played it or is playing it this month. Yeah.
There's a new Umbrella. There's an Umbrella version.
There's an Umbrella
too,
disc. Australian, and, know, yeah, and Kino, I think, is putting out a 4K here soon.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth seeking out. It's probably mid to lower tier Franklin. Like, it's not as good as Road Games or Psycho 2 or a lot of his stuff. But, like, it's still... It's the very definite of like a definition of like a curiosity.
Right. And in no way do I feel a need to see it in another 10 years.
Or ever.
Yeah. But I'd seen it before. I had a VHS of it I got from like Half Price Books in like 06, like a used copy. And I used to watch it. And it, I mean, it's charming.
I just had the Kino disc laying around from like where I bought it for like $8 during one of their sales.
Right. Right.
But I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's worth seeking out. I mean, the second movie we're going to do is, I think, also fits the definition of curiosity. And that's George Romero's Monkey Shines, which is one of, obviously, his non-Living Dead movies.
Yep.
And if we're going to talk about auteurism, is a George Romero film through and through, right down to being... filmed and set in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the mad scientist played by John Pankow and Stephen Root. They do all their monkey training on Carnegie Mellon's campus, which is where my brother went to college. So, Monkey Shines. What do you think of this one?
So, I really like it.
Okay.
I think that...
So does our buddy Simon.
But I also think that I remember it more fondly than on this watch. It had been a few years. I'll say a few things. I think it is flashy as hell. It is so well directed.
Romero actually has money.
Has money. The budget is great. The monkey training stuff is phenomenal. It's about 30 minutes too long.
Like most of his movies, yep, honestly.
Yeah. And it also gets pretty messy thematically, because again, when you're talking about these like killer monkey movies, there's always an element, a lot of them are the element of like the missing link, right? What is the right. kind of middle ground between us and our forebears. And there is, but also in this film is this element of like, we're all monkeys in the end, and we have the primal, that primal, like almost like lizard brain of we'll kill anyone who gets in our way.
Yeah.
And so it tries to do a lot, and it doesn't quite accomplish all of it.
Again, like a lot of Romero movies.
Yeah.
He's a guy with lots of ideas. Or was a guy. Unfortunately, he's dead now.
When it was the two-part deal, right, he did where he did Dark Half, right?
With Orion.
And which is also a messy movie.
And then they went bankrupt, because I believe he ran out of money during the filming of Dark Half, and that's how Dark Half mostly got buried when it came out, is because Orion Pictures gave him the two-film contract, and then they went bankrupt in the process of him making them. So they basically just got dumped with minimal advertising or anything, and
for a Stephen King adaptation too.
A Stephen King adaptation with money, and that stars Timothy Hutton,
yeah.
Amy Madigan,
yep.
is in it. I
kind of like that movie. I do like that movie.
I love that movie. Yeah, I think,
especially as the bad guy, he's great.
Well, I think that's a great, and this is a good jumping off point to talk about Romero just in general, is that the Dark Half feels like Romero with maybe almost like bowling with the bumpers on a little bit,
yeah.
to where he has a guide to it. It still feels like one of his productions, but and maybe part of it was the budgetary limitations, and maybe it was also just adapting a Stephen King property and having an outline more or less that he had to follow. But like, I think that movie's much more successful because it reins in a lot of the ideas while still being fucking weird, having like Argento style, like almost like giallo sequences. Yep. Like that moment, all the razor blade killings in just gnarly. That movie for me works much better than Monkey Shines, because Monkey Shines feels much more, for good or ill, like a straight up Romero experiment, where it's just him being like, what if I made this movie? And it's about this guy who gets, hit by a car. He becomes a quadriplegic. They get this monkey to help him out.
Right.
And like, go through like his day to day. But then, the monkey also develops an attachment to him, and he's getting cucked by Stanley Tucci. And then there's a psychic bond that he develops with the monkey. And then the monkey starts killing people on his behalf. And that's the thing, is that it just kind of, you could hear him like pitching the idea, because that was one of the great things.
It's a book too, right? It was based on a novel.
It was based on a novel too, but like, this is the one that feels like it spins out. Like it just kind of like, it had all these things that he kind of glommed onto, and then just as like, and then John Pankow is like our main character's best friend, who's also injecting himself with like the serum that he's putting in for the monkey to be super smart. That's the other thing. If these movies have taught us anything, don't fuck with the monkeys. Don't experiment on them. Don't inject stuff into them.
Yep.
Just don't do it, because it never turns out great. They're going to revolt.
They're all previews to 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
Or
Planet of the Apes.
Or Planet of the Apes.
They're all prequels to where it's like, this is why the monkeys hate us now, and they rule, and we're the slaves.
Yeah, here's the genetic alterations. And no, I mean, this film is weird because like, it structurally is messy when it comes to the characters, because John Pankow's character is his best friend and says, you are a quadriplegic. I am going to give you a capuchin monkey that I've trained myself. And we'll have this woman who's going to help kind of get him acclimated to the house. But I'm not going to tell you that I've been injecting him, trying to make him smart, and also going to keep coming over. Like,
don't you disrespect Ella like that.
But like, John Pankow is like, he's also like the villain of the film, and the film doesn't reckon with that.
He's the mad scientist.
But it's weird, but they don't deal with it. Like, it's like, he's also his best friend. You're like, wait, what? Like, it's messy where they want to have it both ways. He also had the whole Stephen Root thing where it's like, you could cut that character out completely.
Yeah, like, you would lose nothing except for Stephen Root.
Or in 20 minutes of stuff we really don't need. But I think the early stuff, it starts off so strong.
It really does.
And just from a dramatic standpoint of like, they take the time to be like this guy who's like he was like a college runner, and now he's in law school, and him trying to acclimate to his new life in a wheelchair. And I'll get quadriplegic has to use like the, he's blowing into the tube and he's moving it with his mouth. You know, you really, he's a great director. He does like put you in that seat, so to speak, like the claustrophobia of living in that house.
And it feels closer to, you know, the stuff like the Crazies and Season of the Witch and like these movies that he was making outside of the Dead films that are more like these character pieces.
Martin is
actually a perfect example of like Martin, probably the best version of the arguably outside of Dawn of the Dead and maybe Night, like his best, we'll just say his best non-Living Dead movie.
Right.
Like, cause it's the one that has all of these ideas. But again, I think is reined in by budgetary limitations to where he could only make so much and he could only implement so much. So he's like, okay, what can I get away with? And what's the most like streamlined, succinct way for me to do this and get this stuff on screen? But even that is like very much just kind of honed in on the characters themselves and their relationships with one another. And where Monkey Shine starts with that, and once it starts to devolve into a pure genre exercise, that's where like the ideas kind of come loose a little bit.
Right.
And we lose a lot of the threads to where it's almost like the inverse of Link, to where like Link starts to outstay its welcome a little bit and then it kicks into high slasher gear.
Right.
And then you're like, oh shit, this rules. This is the opposite. This is when it actually gets to the horror stuff. You're like, I don't care. This monkey's cute. Why is he killing people, man?
No, so your original question is like, or what, or your explanation for there aren't more movies like this is they're not scary. Like, you know, like it's like
Ella's cute.
Ella's also as big as like my calf. Like she's so small,
tiny.
You know.
Also, there's too many close-ups.
Yeah.
Like they keep like he really gets a lot of like Ella close-ups, and she's always smiling. She's like, kick, 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 and like just looking. I'm like, I like that cute ass little monkey.
Well, you think about how, you know, while this is not a Stephen King adaptation, it might as well be. It seems like a Stephen King setup of, imagine, and even having the same cover as Skeleton Crew. I think they kind of misadvertised it.
Oh, 100%.
You know, where I was like, oh, this must be a Stephen King movie, and it's also Romero. They probably even put from the filmmaker of Creepshow.
Yeah.
But, like, what's weird about it is, you know, one of King's gifts, for the most part, is whenever he does imagine X, but evil or killer, right? Is he's always been pretty good at making that thing scary. Like the Doberman in Cujo, or the St. Bernard in Cujo, right? In the film and the book. But this is like, you're saying with Ella, is like she's so small and cute that the only person in danger is the guy in the wheelchair.
Yeah, the guy who can't escape her.
And you're like, well, if the whole movie were that, and it were an hour and a half of like him being stuck with a killer monkey and like having to survive, that's not the story.
No.
Like, people come in and out, and, like, they're fine. She's so little. Like,
yeah. She's not hurting anybody.
No.
But, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is I like your Stephen King comparison, because Stanley Tucci's cuckmaster doctor, who starts fucking his girlfriend after he's in the wheelchair, and frankly fucks up his diagnosis, too.
Yeah.
Like, that guy ruined this motherfucker's life. He would have been fine if he just had a different doctor. That's the other thing.
That's the weirdest thing.
And then but the doctor does feel like the non-supernatural villains that King would insert into his narratives. Not necessarily as like red herrings, but also as just like another obstacle for your protagonist. But like Ella dispatches them pretty quickly. She burns a whole cabin down and kills them. But like Tucci, sexy.
Oh, it's nuts. Like,
he's fucking that girlfriend.
We were watching it. Val was like, look at his fucking pecs. I'm like, yeah dude, like, and shoulders.
Yeah.
He's like ripped. Do you know he did Gap ads? Sure. Like back in the day? You know, kind of be kind of
the Devil Wears Nada right here. You know what I'm saying? But I think that this is, while not ultimately a success, definitely an interesting movie, especially if you like Romero. You're also getting towards the end of when Romero makes, frankly, good movies, but interesting movies, because once he starts going back
stuff
I actually like Bruiser. I think Bruiser is another example that fits really well with Monkey Shines of like, he has an idea. What if you woke up and just didn't have a face anymore? And what would you do to the people? Also, another guy. I wonder if Romero was okay. And like, because that guy was getting cucked too. And he goes You're and right. kills, you know, the dude who's fucking his girlfriend. Jason Fleming, though, odd choice. He had weird choices in leading dudes.
Yeah.
But, you know, he stopped making movies that were not just good, but kind of interesting when he made, like, Diary of the Dead, the found footage zombie
Survival
film.
Of the Dead.
Survival, I think, is kind of cool, but doesn't quite get there. Also, you can tell he kind of ran out of money on that one.
Well, that was the one, the first one after Land. And,
yeah,
and
it's
it was
the island one.
Yeah, and we're all like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh.
And he was kind of promoting that one. He was like, I made my zombie Western.
Right.
Which kind of is, but it's him doing his, again, he has an idea. And sometimes he knows how to get there, and other times it's like, well, you tried, George. I'm glad you existed, and we got all this great art from you.
Yeah, and I mean, for listeners, I would say it's worth a watch, too.
Sure.
Like, I know we're kind of giving some wet noodle responses here about some of these movies.
I see here, all right, I'm going to argue with you right now, is that, like, I wrote about this with one of the head canon entries with Graveyard Shift, a movie that you like more than I do, but I still like, is that I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, man, this movie's 3 stars. You should watch it.
You're right.
It's not going to be your favorite movie of all time, but it's interesting. It does some things. It brings some stuff to the table that while it doesn't all come together necessarily, you keep coming back to it because you're like, man, you remember that movie with the crippled guy and the monkey? Maybe I'd give that another shot because
right.
something was going on there. Well, you know?
Well, yeah, and having seen it before, and I was still drawn to want to watch it again. Like, the memories of it were like, oh, wait, this is a cool movie. Like,
yeah.
And again, the way I look at it, too, is like, it's really flashy. If you're looking for an 80s horror film and you've seen them all, you know what I mean? It's like a good fill-in one, too, where it's like,
exactly.
It is a full high-concept, weird horror movie, good soundtrack. Good performances. You know.
Honestly, like, probably for the people who only know Romero through the Dead films, one of the more accessible films that he made outside of that franchise.
Right.
I still think Dark Half is probably the easiest to approach.
Yeah.
But, like, this one, not too far off.
No.
So, 3 is Shockma. Look, the next 2 movies, you know what? I will give you this much. I'm going to be a wet noodle on these.
Right.
Because, like, I didn't find a whole lot to cling to with these, but outside of some maybe ironic enjoyment. Shockma is like if a killer baboon with sex hemorrhoids, like, entered an episode of Saved by the Bell and started murdering people. But, like, to your point, like you said earlier, it's not a dude in a costume. It's a real fucking baboon.
They did something too.
And that
he's
baboon
psychotic.
Is pissed.
Yeah.
That's the most interesting part of the movie. Like, you're watching that baboon attack these kids. You're like, that baboon is so upset. It might hurt these people.
There's a scene like early or many scenes where people are like running and they get behind a door. It takes place like in a science building at like a college. And that, whatever they put behind that door, that baboon is like banging against it with all its energy.
It wants everything.
It wants in.
Whatever is in there, it has all the bananas.
But you had texted me, and I think, not to steal your thunder, but like, it is literally a Mad Libs movie. Like, because the setup, I'm like, when it started, I'm like, wow, it's actually a really good setup is, and they kind of abandoned it pretty quickly. It's just too complicated for them is. So it's I think they're all like grad students or something or like high
sure.
or seniors. And Roddy McDowall, who probably showed up for a couple of days, right?
Oh, 100%. No more than 72 hours on set.
He's the head researcher.
Is that his role?
I think head researcher and head of the department. And,
teacher.
Yeah. And so, but for some reason, he and like 6 or 7 of the like higher up classmates do basically it's almost like LARPing. Like it's like a live action role play, but it's like they're like
there's no costumes.
There's
though.
No costumes, but he sets up a computer program where he can track everyone and where they are in the building. almost like it's a dungeon crawl, right? Yeah. It's like, so you're, okay, I'm going, I need a key for this room. What I have to, you know, solve this riddle or whatever. And while they're doing it.
I mean, and to be fair, it is a neat idea, but this movie was like made for, you know, the price of like a case of Lunchables.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't look great. It does look like TV.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, talk about just even lighting. Like, you just see everything. Yeah. Like, but then they've been doing research on shock moon. This is I'll let you tell. It's kind of like the explanation for what happens with this baboon is really funny.
Again, stop injecting stuff into the monkeys, because the whole scene. I watched it twice. Not the whole movie, just the scene, mind you. I could not sit through this movie twice. But, like, well, I have already, so I guess I just lied. But yeah. It's like, again, to your point of, like, they never clearly define what the fuck these 30-year-olds are doing in this office building. And they're just injecting this monkey with, like, more or less the rage virus.
Yeah.
But they never say, like, why. They're not studying it. There's no data. There's no other dead monkeys. There's just Shakma.
Yep.
And, like, the way the scene plays out is, like, one guy looks at the other guy, and he's like, oh, why are we doing this for? He's like, I don't know, just to see what happens. And he, like, stabs the monkey, and I'm like, this is bad. You shouldn't do this. And then the monkey is so fucking pissed that it kills everybody. And Roddy McDowell, bless him, he's first. You can tell, like, in his contract, he was like, yeah, I'll do your stupid movie as long as you hit my rate and, like, I die first. I just want to leave, and then you can do whatever you want after that.
It's a really weird movie in that they had the concept of someone they had a connection to, a trainer for whoever played Shakma. Like, that was it. And they were like, well, we got, and that, they obviously,
I knew a guy with a baboon once.
Probably. It's like, here's a movie about it. Here's the set. The funny thing was, when I was at the Halloween premiere in 2018 at Fantastic Fest, Danny McBride was talking about when he first met and became friends with David Gordon Green, and they talked about a shared love of Shakma. Like, that was the movie. But it's funny, if you watch Righteous Gemstones, season 4 has a whole Monkey Shine subplot of BJ has a capuchin monkey who falls in love with him and ends up, like, saving the day. It's fucking hilarious. So it's like, this is the kind of movie, like, a horror fan.
See, the thing is, though, I imagine Danny McBride watching this movie the same way that I watched this movie over, like, a few beers and just high as shit and being like, look at that monkey.
I mean, that's it.
Like, that monkey's going to fuck that person up, man.
There's not much to get. I found it really...
not at all.
I found it very charming. I thought it was the definition of, like, eighth grade, you and your friends rent a movie. Like, this is that movie, right?
I guess.
And, like, it's weird, but, like, the cover's amazing. Like, it has that badass looking baboon, and but you're right. The movie starts.
And again, is so mad, even on the movie, on the videotape cover.
Oh, Shakma wants to fuck you up. And you literally, the it starts. And
you owe Shakma money.
And you could almost hear the, like, Family Matters. Like, we're here on this episode of Shakma. Like, yeah. It looks so bad.
And Carl Winslow just walks in, and Shakma's fucking raping Urkel. Like, just horrible, the worst parts of the Bible shit.
Oh, my God, dude. There's not much to say about this one. I mean, this is the definition of... It's funny because, like, you know, when you have other monster movies, right, there's always usually, like, a hit movie that everyone else is ripping off. There's not one for monkeys. Like, so with Jaws, you have... Everyone is referencing Jaws in some way with sharks. You know, alligator ones, you have some good ones. I mean, like...
Yeah.
Alligators.
But even there, you don't... None of them... Those are still Jaws ripoffs for the most part.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, like, John Sayles is writing Piranha and Alligator, but he's still using... Like, Piranha is clearly a Jaws ripoff, and Alligator, while it makes it more urban, obviously, like, is still chasing that killer sea creature kind of vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have, like, you have a structure and a thing, like... You know, you don't have monkey exploitation. I mean, obviously, you have Planet of the Apes, but none of these are trying to play beyond getting Roddy McDowell, you know, Cornelius to come. You're not really doing anything to pull back from that.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Speaking of the worst parts of the Bible, in the shadow of Kilimanjaro, A movie whose name, that's the first time I've ever remembered it correctly. The only film by famed auteur Raju Patel, who I don't know what Arby's he manages now, but I'm sure somebody sells weed in front of it. But like, it's this movie sucks. While also, again, being interesting because it's about a horde of killer baboons destroying people in, is it Kenya? Right?
I forget, Nairobi?
Some African shithole.
No.
And like, just destroying.
No, because they have to go to Nairobi to fly out. I remember that part. So yeah.
What? It's not a nice place. These people are in the middle of nowhere. The movie literally opens with rhinoceroses. That
seems great.
It shares a similar thing with Chacma, is that it feels unsafe.
Yeah.
It feels like had any control over these animals, because like that's the thing, is it opens. It looks like it has money going on, but it's these people in a Jeep. In the middle of, like, nowhere in Africa, and they're, like, messing with these rhinos, and then the rhinos start bucking and chasing the Jeep and, like, hit it one time where I was like, that rhino's going to tip that fucking Jeep over and kill those people. Like, that's the thing.
I think that was accidental. I think they just got it on
There's
film.
No way. Yeah. Totally a happy accident.
Yeah.
But, like, it is. It's just, like, it fits pretty squarely into, like, the whole, like, foreign countries are scary, here comes. But instead of, like, you know, drought, pestilence, lions, somebody sat there. And this is a true story to where it was, like, because they even put it on the poster where it's, like, 10,000 apes or some
80,000.
Oh, was it 80,000?
Stupid.
It's literally, like, you know, a horde of baboons who just descend upon these things like Black Hawk Down style and are just fucking up everything in their path, and you're like, Jesus, what is happening here?
Yeah, it's the film I compared it to, I think before you watched it, was very Ghost in the Darkness, because it is like,
yeah, that's a good comparison.
They're trying to keep this mine open and also like people safe while these, basically the reason that the story I guess happened was there's a horrific drought for months. And when there's a drought, they don't have foraging to do, and they go after whatever they can eat. And they usually eat each other. That's what they say, that baboons will eat each other, but they're not doing that. So they're going after people.
Not a problem you usually experience in, like, say, Iowa.
No, exactly. And what's interesting, one thing is, like, some of it looked like they got really raw, crazy baboon footage, and some of it's like some compositing work they did. But there's one scene where they're at the mine, and
I think there's some puppetry involved. When
they're breaking through the window of that van or the truck, they're definitely like a kind of cheap looking puppet,
animatronic type thing.
But a lot of it's real fucking, like, real fucking baboons. There's a shot where they're at the mine, and they look over toward these hills, and it's like descending. It's almost like the Gallimimus scene in Jurassic Park, where they just come down like a flock of birds. And it's like, generally, like, oh, fuck. Like, how did they get that shot? But it's, you know, the film it reminds me of, but it's not half as or a third as good, is Razorback. It feels like an Ozploitation movie, because it is like, here's these people living in a really secluded outpost.
Makes Razorback look like a tourism video, though. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But to me, Razorback's gorgeous. Like, it's a beautiful film, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Russell Mulcahy, probably a better director than Raju Patel, we'll say.
100%. And in this one, you got, like, Timothy Bottoms as your lead. And John Rhys Davies as, like, the mine owner, who's kind of a good guy and kind of a bad guy. And they're just kind of waiting on the rain. You know, the other film that's very similar to is The Birds. Because it's like, they're at the school. The kids are still at the school, and they're going over there and, like, getting them. And it's like, get them on the van or on the bus. And, you know, it's also doesn't help the version. It's like all that's available, I think, is a VHS rip.
Yeah, like, that's how we watched it, on a Plex server.
Yeah.
Like, well, and the other thing is that, honestly, you did point out one of my main problems with the movie is that there's kind of no conflict.
Right.
Beyond just, like, oh, no, the baboons are coming. You know what it made me think of? Did you see that viral tweet for, I think it was a year, a couple years ago, I don't know, but it was like the one guy on Twitter who was like, I bet you I could fight 100 gorillas.
Yeah.
That That's what this is like, that, but made literal to where like they made those AI videos of like what would happen if one guy actually tried to fight 100 gorillas and he dies like, you know, 10 seconds in.
Right.
That's what where I was like, I did again, kind of stoned, have that thought where I was like, oh, this is just the 1v100 video, like, but in 1986 or whatever.
No, it's, you know, it's one of those movies too where it definitely is stretching its budget to a ridiculous degree. Like, oh, we got these couple bigger act, you know, bigger actors, Timothy Bottoms, you know,
you're not a big Bottoms bro.
I'm not. I mean, I like him in, Last Picture Show.
Yeah. You're familiar with his CV.
Yes. But yeah, this one, it's kind of like an adventure, but like to your point, it's one of those movies too, where it's like with the, compared to The Birds, right? Once you realize The Birds are bad, it is like, you're the whole movie, they're all fucked and they're terrified. Like it keeps up, but you got to stay inside. And this one, it's kind of like they're still walking around, like, well, the monkeys are out there, I guess. Like there's no sense of urgency, right? It's like,
yeah,
we got to do something about this. It's like there's no set, there's only one real siege scene.
Well, it's also like, sort of the difference between like when you compare this to The Birds is that there's no explanation for the birds. The birds just come, right. They fuck shit up, then they vanish.
Right.
In this one, they tried, especially since it's based on a true story, they give you a rationale for why these baboons are so mad.
Yeah.
But, like, it just, again, becomes, like, if you live in the middle of nowhere in Africa, I guess one of the obstacles or the dangers of doing so is that, like, the baboons might get mad one day and, you know, they might fuck up your whole town.
Yeah, that's probably one of the problems of the film, too, is it doesn't have, like, a point of view. Not that it needs one, but, you know, with a film like Jaws, right, you have the whole theme of if only the mayor had listened and not put commerce over livelihoods, right? This one has elements of that where you have the mind's got to stay open, but he's also a hero.
Well, that's so what I meant by there's no, like, conflict. You can't really figure out, like, what are the, like, outside of, like, yeah, it would suck to be killed by a horde of baboons. Like, what are the stakes here? Like, right. What could we potentially lose? Like, who are we rooting for? Like, why do we give a fuck about this outside of, like... Because that's the thing that sucks about this movie the hardest is that, like, it's not a horror film, or at least it's not pitched like a horror film. No. It's almost pitched like an adventure romp.
Yep.
And, like, there's not enough adventure to cling to. So when the baboon... And then there's not enough characters that are developed... And then when the baboons actually attack, you don't care, and the baboon action's really not that great.
No,
like it's cool, and there's some neat like kind of just damn, like you unleash a horde of monkeys on something, they're gonna fuck some shit up, and that's gonna look cool if you capture it on camera. So that's almost like incidental at a certain point. But like for the most part, like I don't know, like I watched it ended, I was like, well, that's a movie I've seen now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to get to Primate?
Let's do it.
All right. We're back talking about Primate, the first great movie of 2026. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
So this was, again, more of a you pick than a me pick, but it kind of was born out of your love of Johannes Roberts and 47 Meters Down and Strangers, Pray by Night. The other thing I think it was honestly born out of, to be frank, was so that we could say fuck you to our friend James, who was just a total dick about this movie. Like, he saw it at Fantastic Fest, and he was like, I walked out, like, 40 minutes. And then we did ask him and his partner, Deb, at what point they walked out on, which made his reaction even more inexplicable, is he sat through at least half of the movie.
Yeah.
And he got to the scalp ripping part and he's like, yeah, I had to go. And I was like, what the fuck? This movie rules. And you know what, James, if you're listening, and I know you are, you're wrong.
Yeah, this was, well, I remember I saw that it was playing at Fantastic Fest and I didn't have a badge. And I really wanted to go.
Yeah.
And then James, like, I didn't like it, but I had other friends who were there who loved it. Like, who, it was kind of, it played really well, I heard.
Well, and also they've centered, like, the marketing around this movie on like audience reactions and like, you know, the old school, like, watch this audience jump out of their seats during the killer monkey movie.
Or out in the lobby. I can't believe what I just saw. It was fucking crazy.
It's a real old school marketing technique, but like, it's just weird. And also like the audience we saw this movie with, like, we're really into it.
Oh yeah.
Because the movie, it does exactly what it sets out to do.
Yeah.
And kind of not a whole lot more than that. Like, it's just like, here's 89 minutes of this monkey gets rabies and it fucks people up. It basically asks the question, it's like, what if Cujo was a monkey? Because it's kind of the same exact movie.
No, our buddy Daniel texted me and he loved it. And he was like, yeah, it's just instead of a hot car, it's a pool. And instead of a St. Bernard, it's a monkey. Like, it's just, it is like one to one. And I think what I really like about this movie is I like a film that, like a horror film in particular, it's like gives you an idea early on of what you're in for. So that you're not, so like there's a face ripping in the first like minute and a half that is really gory. And I was, cause I didn't know it was rated R. I actually didn't know the rating going in.
Oh, really?
And cause like,
are the 47 meters down, they're both PG-13. Right? Strangers is R.
R and very gory. Gorier, I think, than the original. But I was like, I didn't know. And then also the music starts. And I mean, we both thought it was actually John Carpenter. Like, and
the synth score for this movie fucking rips.
But it's pure Carpenter. Other friends have joked. I mean, was that a Carpenter score?
It's a really good imitation.
But the specific like plugins he uses. But it just starts off and you're like, it's a breezy teen. It's the same setup pretty much as 47 meters down of like, these really all good-looking, cute girls and guys who are flirting with each other and then end up trapped. And one of the digs I've seen some critics, you know, kind of take at the film is that the characters aren't that smart. Like, it is kind of like they hang in the pool and then they're like, oh, he's not looking, let's get out. Like, there's not, like, I just rewatched Fall, which I liked a lot. The one where they climb the radio tower and they get stuck at the top.
Yeah.
And that one actually is very almost like 127 hours, where it's like, here's the three things I have. How do I survive with this? Right. But almost with this kind of film, I don't need that. Like, it is a slasher. Like, and
I mean, the movie it reminds me also of is, we joke about what if Cujo but a monkey. But I mean, like, this movie also kind of answers like, what if Jaws 2 but a monkey?
Yeah.
So it's just about a, like, I always hate that criticism, especially when it comes to slasher movies or really horror in general, of where they're like, the kids are so dumb. Why did they do that?
Yeah.
And like, sometimes it's egregious and it's become like a horror movie trope too. But like, I also dare, you know, and go take a bus and pick up 10 teenagers. Don't do this, actually, because you're going to get put on a list somewhere before you even get to the bad part. Is go get 10 teenagers, put them in a house, and then fucking unleash a real killer baboon and see what choices they make in real life. Like, I bet you they're not great.
No, it's, and it's so well paced. It is, and it's not a lot of them. Like, they don't spend a lot of time in that pool. Like, I liked that it wasn't like, okay. Like, I tried to watch Killer Whale, the new one. It just came out.
That's not a Franco Nero movie.
No,
you were texting me about it, I have to be honest. You were a Killer Whale. Rough. And I was like, I don't even know what this one is.
It was the one you texted me, the new one where the girl, it's like The Shallows with a killer whale.
Oh, that's out?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's like,
it's called Killer Whale. I thought it was called something else.
It's called Killer Whale.
It stinks.
It's horrible. It's like shot in a pool and they used green screen, so it all looks like it was shot in someone's like backyard pool. It's bad.
If Shamu was horny?
But that movie, watching that and then remembering Primate, I was like, the people are really dumb in Killer Whale, but it's also a dumb fucking movie, right? And there's no propulsion of narrative. Primate is the least boring movie. Like,
yeah,
it never lets up. Like,
as the children say, it understands the assignment.
Yeah.
Like, it just, like, and the other thing that it does do, the closest out of the movies that we have just discussed, which, funnily enough, and also to emphasize our point about how small the killer monkey genre actually is, all these trailers were played in the Draft House pre-show, like leaving one after we'd already watched them all, and we were sitting there. It was literally one after the another, leading right up into Primate, and I was like, "Huh, this feels familiar." But like the closest one out of the ones we just discussed that Primate kind of skews towards is Link. Because it's very much isolated house on a body of water again.
Yep. Friend of the family.
Friend of the family. The monkey's good at first and trained by an elder adult there and kept for the only. This is kind of one of my nitpicks on the movie with the narrative is they don't really. They kind of yada yada why the monkey's there.
Yes.
Because they have, because, you know. The one who owns it and who owns the house is the one girl's dad, who's a famous author.
Yep.
Who writes like Michael Connelly type like thrillers.
The Oscar-winning father from Coda.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, he's played by Troy Kotsur, who is a deaf man in real life. And the movie plays with his deafness and is pretty has a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
And there's even, you know, a lot of ASL and subtitles, and it's trying a thing. And it introduces the monkey and Troy Kotsur's character owning the monkey as part of like a sign language thing, but it doesn't quite spell out why he kept.
Well, because it was the mom's.
Yeah.
The mom trained him. And then the mom died.
And so they kept. It was like an emotional link to it.
Well, they just kept him, I think. To your point, like, you don't have the specificity of.
Link.
Of Monkey Shines or Link.
Yeah.
Or like either research or this is a helper.
Yeah, where because the movie almost spells out to a detrimental degree as to why they're experimenting on the monkeys, as opposed to Shockmo, which is just what happens if we shove this up the monkey's ass.
Right. But that was the weird thing about the movie, too. I think you had commented after we saw it was they kind of just allied that this is a sad thing that he's gone bad because he gets rabies. And very quickly, they're like, well, fuck this monkey. Like, it doesn't have a sense of, like they don't build up enough time. One of the reviews I read I agree with is they didn't build up enough time with Ben to say, oh, I really care about their connection. Like, so when he goes bad, you're like, holy fuck. But it's, like, in the first, like, 15 minutes, he's already, like, bad.
I think that's what strengthens the Cujo comparison, though, too. Because you don't really have much of a relationship to Cujo.
Yeah, he's not their dog,
He's not their dog.
Yeah.
Where, like, they kind of have a relationship. But also, like, you can yada yada that to a certain degree because, like, the girls don't live there anymore. They've been away from Ben for, like, a while, and they're revisiting. And, like, I feel like there was enough of, like, a shorthand to where they're like, the one girl still knows him. You introduce it to the others. Troy Kotsur's there. They explain the mom thing. And it's like there's enough there, but also, like, the thing that this movie does completely right that the other four, honestly, we watched all do wrong is that it recognizes that there's only so much time you can fill up with this monkey. So let's make it 89 minutes. Let's dispel with all the fucking narrative build up and backstory. And, like, let's just get to rabid monkey fucks people up as quickly as possible. And once this movie gets cooking, it's like Johannes Roberts is really turning into, like, one of our great modern kind of, like, cheap thrill merchants.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know, to where he's just like, all right, cool. Here's the setup. Here's the premise. Meet the characters. Boom. Like, just let chaos ensue. And, like, because this becomes much like Link, a straight up, much more of a straight up slasher than even Link does, because Link's a little more goofy.
Yeah.
Where this is like, no, what if Michael Myers was just a dude in a monkey suit? And like, this monkey it fucking fucks people up. It also plays on the one thing that they introduce in Link 2 that Terrence Stamp is actually unusually obsessed with, is like how strong monkeys are.
Yes.
Like, he has that weird conversation with Elizabeth Shue at one point where he's like, yeah, imagine if this amazing monkey could rip your arms off and then your legs and then beat you to death with them. And you're like,
we lift the car.
Sir,
and,
it's noon. Like, we haven't even had lunch yet and you're talking about this monkey like dismembering people. Like, this movie's also obsessed with that, where they're like, monkeys, strong. If it grabs your jaw, it's ripping that motherfucker off. And that gore shot is awesome.
It's, well, and it, like, to your point, like, it really knows, again, it does the thing. It knows what we're there for.
Yeah.
And, you know, it also, to our original kind of question of why aren't there more films, of, again, to repeat ourselves, but, like, monkeys aren't scary usually. And Ben is scary.
This,
like,
monkey's actually scary.
Because they make him feral, too. So he's goo coming out of his mouth.
I think also it helps.
He's bigger, too.
Well, and the main difference between this and the other movies is the other movies use real monkeys. And right. This is a guy in a suit. So you have a little more control 100%. And design over what the monkey does. And there's still, like, and how menacing the monkey can be. And there's still, like, some of that in Shockmare. Like, there's the one great shot in the only great shot in Shockmare.
Yes, yep.
Is where it, you know, he attacks one dude, and then it shoots it from behind, almost like the xenomorph.
Under the mouth, yeah.
Under the mouth, where there's blood dripping from the baboon's mouth. And, like, this movie is just, like, it someone in production, I guarantee you, pitched, what if we used a real monkey? And then somebody else was like, I think we could just control this more and design it better and really kind of let it cook if we just did a dude giving a monkey performance.
Yeah.
And no. Like,
and not CG. And they use a little CG for, like, the face for a little bit more expression. But, like, the fact that it's not, you know, because that's the thing, too. We're coming off Planet of the Apes movies where they shot forward technology of,
yeah,
look how photorealistic these. But I love that it's a guy in a suit. Like, it really adds a.
The performance is really good, too. Again,
he's really good.
It is what makes it much more like a slasher, is that it, instead of Michael Myers, it's a Michael Monkey. Because it's like, yeah, you know, the mask is the monkey suit, and it's like, it's that he plays the monkey like a slasher, to right down to even, like, playing with his victims and stuff. Like, when he gets that dude on the bed and, like, pins him down or whatever, I was like, is this monkey gonna rape this guy? Like, this, it gets it, kind of weird and uncomfortable at certain points.
It's like a scene out of Trouble Every Day, where she's playing with the guy that she Beatrice Dalle.
Yeah,
it's like that kind of, like, we're playing, it's kind of funny, and then it gets bad real quickly. Well, yeah, I think that, you know, Johannes Roberts, too, I love that his films feel so small. Like, at the same time, like, that's why I really love 47 Meters Down in Cage. That, like, it is a really tight, like, it's in this cave. Like, it's not this big epic.
I think tight is better than small.
Like, sorry. But
they are contained.
A small setting with a tight narrative. Yeah. You know, like,
he doesn't like fat at all.
No, and it. But I think fucking Uncaged was a January movie as well. Like, it's the perfect kind of movie to come out.
January, February. Strangers, yep. Pray by Night was, too.
Yeah, it's like
he's kind of a dumpy-wary auteur.
But it's like, that audience was fucking packed. And they were loving it.
People were into it, man.
They were loving that movie.
I've tried to sell this movie to some people. Especially at the bar and stuff. And I do get some goofy looks, kind of, again, because it's just like, I don't know, monkey isn't scary. And I'm like, oh, this one actually kind of is. Also, the other thing this movie does incredibly well is the violence in it isn't goofy. Like, it really commits to, like, a mean-spirited, nasty tone.
Yeah.
Like, probably best exemplified by when, you know, the monkey pulls that kid over the edge of the cliff. And he goes out of his way to follow the body all the way down.
Face
and
first.
And do an extreme close-up of his head smushing on the rocks below. And I was like, oh, we're not fucking around here. Like, this is, you're upset.
Yep. It does, it just elevates the movie, too, to, like, it's a really good gore fest, too. Like you said, it's mean. It has a mean-spirited nature to it.
Yeah.
It
reminds me of, like, the early Alexandre Aja movie.
I was saying the same thing. It has a French New Extremity vibe. Yeah. It has a Hills Have Eyes of that kind of mean.
Exactly.
You know, but it's also having fun at the same time, but it's not funny.
Yeah.
Like, you could see that he's enjoying making this movie. And, like, I think he is. Like, he's a great workman, too. Like, he really, his, all the horror set pieces are really well done. I think the set piece where they're hiding in the slatted closet, so it's Halloween.
Yeah.
Also
very much so.
And then they're behind plastic, and he puts his face through the plastic, and he's close to them, and it's almost like Alien, of Alien 3, of, you know, the xenomorph near Ripley's face. It's just like pulling, and then also like his nostrils were blowing on the plastic, like the velociraptors in Jurassic Park. Like,
oh yeah,
Johannes also just feels like, I mean, obviously he's a fan. Like, he's pulling on, he just loves this type of, and it feels like a true 80s or 90s, like, programmer.
Yeah.
You know?
He just kind of churns this stuff out, and they're super entertaining, especially if you're kind of a sicko like we are and live for these types of things. Like, this is totally made for us, and obviously, like, inspired an entire episode about it.
Well, we were going to do it anyway, and then we were, like, 3 minutes into the movie seeing it, and then you and I both look at each other kind of like, okay, like, we're going to, yeah. Like, it was, I was like, they're going to have to fuck up real bad for this not to be the best movie so far this year.
You just ripped Rob Delaney's face off. Didn't see that one coming, yeah. Honestly. Didn't think this movie was going to start this way, but I'm glad it did.
No, it really, I'm like, fuck, man, okay.
Well, Martin, this has been great.
Indeed.
The main message here is go watch Primate. It's terrific. It'll probably be on streaming here soon.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we're going to actually start an unofficial, we'll say, series. I don't think we're going to do them all at once. We're kind of going to space it out throughout the course of the year. But Martin has decided to take his journey through Italian cinema, specifically Italian genre cinema, and we're going to start that off with the collaborations between the Italian icon Franco Nero,
yes,
and Enzo Castellari, because we're gonna do Chioma, Day of the Cobra, Street Law, High Crime, and the movie that honestly it inspired the entire thing, because you just couldn't live without this, The Shark Hunter.
The Shark Hunter.
So you'll have to tune in next time to hear about all that, because this is going to be one of many. We've been planning this one out now, too, because Martin, he got a little bit of that Italian salami in him, and now he's ready to roll, baby.
I'm in, man.
He's hooked. So, but you have to stay tuned to the next episode of Secret Handshake to see just how much of that salami he can take. Bye.
We'll see you then.